Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Thursday, April 11th. This is the second of 2 days of public hearings on 5 House bills simultaneously, but all on the same general topic. So we're going to open the public hearing on all 5. We had our brief explanation yesterday of how they are similar or different, each of those. We don't need to go through the explanation again today. I intend to start today's hearing the way I did yesterday, with allowing each person speaking 3 minutes. We think we can just about make it through the whole list if everyone takes 3 minutes. If someone doesn't need to take the full 3 minutes because what you've said has already been said by someone else and you just want to underscore that you agree with that point of view, if you take a little less time, to the extent that some of you do that, we probably will have time to get through the entire list today. It would be great if we could allow for everyone who's asked to speak to be able to speak. I'm opening the public hearing on House Bill 2123, 2158, 2159, 2169, 2270. Legislative Revenue Office, do you have anything to add before we start calling up the speakers?
No, I think you're good to go.
Thank you. So the first panel will be Gary Burke, Steve Bob, Michael Collins, and then after that, for you to be ready to speak. And we're also checking to make sure if you've come from a really long distance, we're going to try to get you in, even regardless of where you signed up in the queue. Next would be John Hill, Max Belke, and Joseph Gilpatrick. So you can get ready. Hello. Welcome.
Morning.
And everyone, when they speak, yesterday it went very well. Everyone identifies themselves first, not only for us, but also it gets recorded who's speaking.
Good morning. My name is Gary Burke. I'm a tribal member from the Umatilla Reservation. I'm the Board of Trustees Chairman.
Morning, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Steve Bob, Sr., Council Member, Confederate Tribes of Grand Round.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Michael Collins. I'm the Director of Managed Healthcare for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, my name is Gary Burke. I am the chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Confederate Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation, and I am here to support House Bill 2270. We applaud the state's work for our tribal government, including our Health Commission and Yellow Hawk Tribal Health Center, on the matter. Tobacco use and vaping products are an unfortunate reality in our tribal community. The 2015 Umatilla Morrill County Community Health Assessment indicated that 23% of Native American and Alaska Natives reported using tobacco products versus 15% of the Umatilla County respondents and 17% in the state of Oregon. But we are making progress. Many know of our tribal government and commitment to our community health and opening our Yellow Hawk Tribal Health Center. We have established tobacco prevention policy goals. We want to restart conversations across tribal community about how devastating tobacco use can be to long-term health. And we must get through to young people about the dangers of vaping. Right now, Yellow Hawk is focusing energy on 3 areas. We manage a tobacco quit line. We operate cessation programs. We provide referrals and behavioral health for counseling. The support we offer has been important to tribal members. We want to stop using tobacco, but there is so much more we could do. If Yellow Hawk had additional funding, we could hire a tobacco prevention coordinator to provide case management and tobacco cessation clinic, help people be successful. They could also play as a liaison role with other tribes to share information about what is working and that could boost our success statewide. And when it comes to kids, we know the tobacco industry targets Native youth. So we would do more tobacco education and outreach with them. And finally, we want to clarify for the record that reservations do not create black market for tobacco sales. On the Umatilla Reservation, sales of all tobacco products include any and all applicable state tobacco taxes. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, committee, for allowing me this time this morning. I'm here today on behalf of the Council of the Confederated Tribes Grand Round to testify on our support for House Bill 2270, the tax on cigarettes and tobacco-related products, on the basis that it also addresses this addictive effect on the ethnic population and those of lower of economic and social status. Native Americans currently have the highest rate of cigarette smoking of all ethnic and racial groups, and most disturbing the negative impact it has on our women. We all have knowledge of the destructive nature of tobacco usage and now the practice of using e-cigarettes. Most are aware of this fact from the time that they initiate the use of tobacco products. With the addictiveness, the lower prices, the marketing tactics, and after years of usage, only leads to respiratory illness, cancers, disfigurement, and death. I have data regarding percentages on everything from adult ethnic groups to 11th graders and 6th graders, but the group I would like to focus on mainly is the adult tobacco use of those of a lower socioeconomic status. Those of lower SES is 28%, and those not lower SES, 14%, so exactly double the amount. I will leave it to those who know more about it than I do regarding the statistics and the burden upon the Oregon Health Plan and Medicaid. As a Native American and as a leader in our tribal community, we frequently refer to the care of our people for seven generations. The concern turns towards the well-being and health of our people and mainly our young people, for they are our treasures and they will carry the hopes and dreams of our people into the future. It is the tribe's belief that HB 2270 will benefit and enable the tribes to affect the commercial tobacco use prevention sensation. The tribe wishes to show support for House Bill 2270 and the Oregon lawmakers in their efforts to improve the health of not only minority groups, but of all Oregonians. Thank you respectfully, Confederate Tribes of Grand Round.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Collins. I'm the Director of Managed Health Care for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Indian Reservation of Oregon. And I'm here to express Warm Springs support for House Bill 2270. We'd like to also thank the state of Oregon for working with our tribes on the matters of tobacco and vaping inhalant products. These products continue to show harm in our tribal community. As of 2015, 36.2% of Central Oregonians use tobacco to smoke, and 14% use vaping or e-cigarette products, and 5% use chewing tobacco. In Warm Springs, we continue to offer services to our community to quit tobacco use through our cessation program, and we also have a prevention program that works to keep people from ever starting to use these products in the first place. I want to deviate a little bit and give you a little bit of firsthand testimony. I'm a former smoker, and I'll be the first to admit that I liked smoking. You know, I made the choice to quit smoking and thought I would use a vaping product to achieve that result. That's probably the worst decision I could have ever made, because what you're doing is you're just substituting one drug for another. It's pretty much like saying, well, I'm going to quit drinking. So instead of having a shot of vodka every night, I'm going to have a bottle of beer. You're just substituting one drug for the other. So my moment of realization that I was addicted to tobacco came when my daughter wouldn't let me hold my grandchild. Because she says, you're a smoker, Dad. I can't let you hold her. I knew then I had to quit smoking. I'm proud today to say I can hold my grandchildren. because, you know, that stays on your garments, that stays in your, it's just like methamphetamine sticking to everything. It's the same thing, and that carries through, and it still causes the long-term effects of health disparities. So the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs would like to support their, express their support for House Bill 2270 and reiterate that the tobacco tax is collected on sales on the reservation and receded to the state. There will not be anyone coming to our reservation to get tax-free tobacco. That will not happen. We do have a long way to go to induce a grand change in our communities, and our tribal council has set priorities that are committed to curbing tobacco use. With Warm Springs receiving additional funding from this tax, we'd be able to expand our programs and services to reach our community, to assist in the goal of reducing tobacco product use and achieving our goal of a healthier community by empowering our youth to not partake in tobacco product use through education and outreach, and to have better services for those that are active tobacco product consumers to assist them in their goals of becoming healthier. I want to thank you for allowing the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and providing this committee with testimony, and we'll be submitting written testimony on the site by the close of business today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all three for being with us. Next, we have John, Max, and Joseph. After that, we will have Olivia Quiroz, Carrie Lopez, Xenia. I'm going to mess up the last name, but you probably know who you are.
You should make a privilege.
Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Gilpatrick. Thank you for listening to me today. I was a 20-plus year smoker. I quit smoking cigarettes using a vaporizer over 8 years ago. Flavor that worked for me was peach. Tried tobacco, didn't work. It was a struggle for me to quit with a vaporizer, even because it's not the same. It's not the same as smoke. It has a different sensation for people. So it was very difficult. Once I did, I noticed major health differences to my benefit almost instantaneously. Basically, something that tastes entirely different than smoke is what helped me to quit. I lost both my parents to smoking. They were addicted for over 50 plus years, trying to quit countless times and failing. When I was younger, they smoked 2 packs a day up until the time they died. All that time, our government kept taxing cigarettes, knowing good and well that they're addicted, and it's a disease, an addiction, like, you know, if you're addicted to cocaine or if you're addicted to heroin, you need tools to get off of these addictions. But now our government taxes it over and over again, knowing that they're good and well gonna pay for it. And so you guys put this tax on the lower income and the indigent and the people with mental disabilities, you know, that have anxiety and, you know, life stresses. And we come up with these silly ideas that that harm reduction isn't real, that something that is 95% safer isn't a better option. And, you know, I've spent my entire last decade seeing people change from on oxygen and with asthma. And, you know, my mom, she wouldn't quit. You know, she sat down in her bottom room. If she couldn't climb her stairs, she had to wash herself in a sink. And she sat there on oxygen and smoked until she died, because it's an addictive drug. And so if we're going to just continue to add higher prices because you know that people are going to pay for it, that's just unfair, and it's just not right, and that's not the way that America should treat people. A majority is trying to put and impose taxes on a minority that is addicted. Would you do this to people that are now addicted to opiates? So they've used medications, and now, you know, we wouldn't get them off of it, so we're going to charge, $1,500 a pill. I know we're doing that with insulin now, too, but, you know, it's not right. And so now my parents are dead. You know, I myself as a smoker, you know, I took a pack of cigarettes over having my own lunch for a 12-hour shift, you know, and there's no doubt of its addiction. And I make vaping products. I manufacture over 200 FDA-registered products in the state of Oregon. I employ quite a bit of people. The ingredients are the same nicotine bases that is in the edible gum, the lozenges, the patches, edible food grade flavorings, and vegetable glycerin. That is it. That is the only thing that's in these products. It's less ingredients than the patches, the gums, and the, you know, I don't agree with taxing cigarettes even just because it's not right. But to put it to tobacco and vaping in the same category is just wrong. The decline of cigarette smoking directly correlates with the rise of vaping, and it's and I understand that children make bad decisions, and honestly, the largest rise of tobacco, or excuse me, of vapor use, the largest rise of vapor use in the last 2 years was when Tobacco 21 was introduced, because then all these kids started buying it from the internet.
Mr. Gilpatrick,
yes,
excuse me, you may not have noticed, but the timer did go off.
I understand. The Native Americans took 9 minutes, and I would
there,
love to
and
have
there
the
are...
same. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Great. Good morning, Chair Nathanson and fellow board members. My name is John Hill. I'm the president of the Oregon Cigar Association, and I want to talk to you about premium cigars. It's different than cigarettes. We've heard a lot of testimony about cigarettes, not a lot about premium cigars. The House Bills 2158 and 2270 both include taxation on premium cigars. So my statement is, passing either of these bills with premium cigars in it simply won't support a smoke-free Oregon program or the Oregon Health Plan. It negatively impacts it. So let me explain why. We've heard testimony for these bills based on revenue models from various viewpoints. However, the one that is most consistent with everyday behavior is the fact that folks from Washington come across the border to Oregon to purchase cigarettes, liquor, and many high-value items like furniture. We've seen this every day. If you accept that everyday occurrence, then you should accept the fact that the reverse will certainly hold true. Oregonians will go into Washington, Idaho, or online to purchase premium cigars for a lower price. Many others will just get it from even outside the country. You can buy Cuban cigars online, and those are not legal to smoke in the United States, but they're there. It's every day. So, based on that, you're really not changing the consumption behavior, you're changing the purchasing trends. So cigar smokers have many other options to go purchase these someplace else. Cigarette folks don't. There is no online easy access for them. If you raise the prices, it's basically the same as Washington, but for neighboring states for premium cigars, it is different. It is a different product altogether. I know many in the panel consider a loss in premium cigar tax revenue acceptable because they think it's going to support a smoke-free Oregon and an Oregon health plan. But that is based on a false premise. You will not be changing the consumption behavior with these bills. All you're doing is chasing the revenue outside the state. So that was my argument. And if you're going to defund some of these things, because you will lose revenue because it will be chased outside the state, you will be losing revenue for programs that work, programs like the tobacco education program. I've seen that firsthand. My neighbor has two girls. He smokes cigarettes, I smoke cigars. Every time we light up together, both those little girls come out there and explain, you shouldn't be doing that, it's gonna cause cancer, you're gonna die. I don't want you guys to die. It's there, it's real. The kids get it. They get it because they see these commercials on TV a lot. I would hate for that to go away and have the next generation of kids not see as many commercials because it's been defunded because we've decided to jack the price up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, distinguished members of the House Committee on Revenue, good morning. My name is Max Belkin. I'm the Director of State Public Policy at Juul Labs. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. Prior to my current role, I served as the Director of Budgets and Revenue and as the Director of State and Local Taxation Task Force at the National Conference of State Legislatures. I'm here today to provide my insights and general observations that apply to the bills before this committee pertaining to the taxation of vapor products. You'll find my full remarks online, as well as an article entitled from yesterday in the New York Post, A Tale of Two Juul Pods, China's Counterfeits Pose a Threat to U.S. Juul's Lab's corporate mission is simple: the elimination of combustible cigarettes. The government should not disincentivize, therefore, the government should not disincentivize smokers from switching to vapor products by levying exorbitant excise taxes and increasing their costs. Vapor products provide an alternative to adult smokers interested in switching away from combustible cigarettes. Reducing the number of people who smoke cigarettes is a shared public policy goal that can also reduce strains on public health care budgets. New York State this year is expected to spend $3.3 billion on Medicaid for smoking-related illnesses alone. But I like to talk about the administrative challenges regarding the taxation of vapor products, which stem from the nascent nature of an industry that offers products that are not uniform across the product category. Unlike traditional tobacco products, which are generally homogeneous across the product class, vapor products can vary drastically depending on the e-liquid solution and delivery device. Moreover, wide disparities in state tax rates can incentivize smuggling in from lower tax jurisdictions, as high tax rates can fuel a black market. Tax avoidance and tax evasion can make tobacco products more affordable, accessible, and widely available, especially for youth. This activity undermines the health impact of higher tobacco taxes and other tobacco control efforts. New York State, for instance, has the highest cigarette tax in the country. It also has the highest rate of cigarette smuggling. Approximately 56% of cigarettes sold in the state of New York are smuggled. It is highlighted in a July 2018 report from the Pew Charitable Trust regarding vapor products. Wide disparities in state tax rates probably incentivize smuggling and tax evasion. High tax rates could fuel a black market. Moreover, any imposed vapor tax should be simple to enforce. Oregon, one of the first states to legalize recreational marijuana, replaced its initial tax on marijuana growers with a 17% retail excise tax. However, concerns that the initial tax would be too complicated to enforce. I find those same administrative difficulties regarding vapor products. So I propose that any tax should be levied at the point of sale. It's the most workable tax structure for vapor products, as has been true for many other types of taxes on products. This tax is relatively straightforward to administer, is transparent for consumers, and is equitable between different types of vapor products. Vapor products taxes that are imposed at the retail level and are separate and distinct on a customer's receipt provide transparency for customers and is equitable. Provide transparency and incident accountability for the retailers who sell these products. For the aforementioned reasons, it's within the state's interest to impose any e-liquid tax at point of sale. And in closing, I'll just skip. I'm sorry for my extra 15 seconds, but I'm proud of my work at NCSL to help build good tax structures for both states and for industries to regulate. Thank you, and I would like to, happy to answer any questions, but we're not taking any of those.
Thank you all for those of you who have already provided testimony for us to post, for the committee and for the public to read, and anyone else who hasn't submitted written testimony but who wants to, you are welcome to submit your testimony to us today, and we'll make sure that everyone has it available to read. And I'm sorry that a couple members of the committee who were here yesterday weren't able to be with us here today, but they also then have access to the materials. Thank you again.
Thank you.
So now we're hearing from Olivia, Carrie, and Xenia. After that, we will go to Jana Collingwood, Ali Stubert, and Michael Jones from, looks like Lynn or Lynn County. Hello.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Representative Finley, and Representative Marsh, and members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Olivia Quiroz, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Latino Health Coalition. We are a statewide health advocacy organization working to eliminate health disparities in the Latino community. The Oregon Latino Health Coalition has been a major voice for initiating and advancing policies and programs to build healthy communities. Through community engagement, policy advocacy, and leadership development, the Oregon Latino Health Coalition has been instrumental in promoting the health and well-being of all Oregonians. Today, we are here to support the tobacco tax increase in House Bill 2270 and address the tremendous opportunity to dramatically improve public health by reducing tobacco use, fund the Oregon Health Plan, and investments to cessation and tobacco prevention programs. Tobacco is the single most preventable cause of death and disease in our society and a major contributor to healthcare costs. Smoking harms nearly every organ of the body, and according to the Surgeon General report, smoking and other tobacco use takes a toll on the health of Latinos. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death among Latino men and the second leading cause among Latino women, and tobacco use is an important risk factor. National research also indicates that e-cigarettes are the most commonly used tobacco product among Latino high school students. 14.8% of Latino high school students currently use e-cigarettes, which is lower than the rate than those of white students, but higher than the e-cigarette use rate for African-American students. Oregon's Latino population is growing at a rate faster than the national rate and are also significantly younger than white Oregonians. Latinos are also the least likely of any racial ethnic group to have health insurance. With limited access to healthcare, it is less likely that Latino smokers will be advised by a healthcare provider to quit smoking or have access to cessation treatments. Raising the tobacco tax by $2 will be a huge investment for the health of all Oregonians. And since the young are particularly price sensitive, it is vital that an Oregon tax increase is imposed on all tobacco and vaping products, including e-cigarettes, to help Latinos from becoming the next big wave of tobacco consumers. It is increasingly important to ensure that all Latinos have access to healthcare opportunities they need to thrive. Real progress in tobacco control will require commitment and efforts across all sectors of our society, not just local, state, but working with culturally specific organizations. At the Oregon Latino Health Coalition, we serve as a trusted organization and apply community-based interventions that are culturally and linguistically appropriate. We are deeply committed to change the conditions that contribute to the health inequities experienced by all communities and work in partnership with other coalitions to advance health equity in our state. We urge you to invest in the well-being of our communities and support House Bill 2270. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. You want me to go next? Good morning. Representatives, I'm happy to be here. I'm Carrie Lopez from the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board, member of the Tallawa Tribe on the tip of Southern Oregon, Northern California. I'm here today to talk, maybe just to share some stories. I've been working in tobacco policy, prevention, education, and cessation for 20 years with the tribal communities and the urban Indian health population. And I just want to share that I have seen success. So this bill gives an opportunity to invest in our communities. We've talked a lot about prevalence data. We've talked a lot about socioeconomic. I wanted to bring up a point in the mid-90s and 2000s, we had what we called a paradigm shift in tobacco. So we saw a drastic rate of stopping smoking in white populations. And at that point, we did this shift to what we called the policy shift. So I want to share that the tribes in Oregon, our 9 tribes in Oregon, have developed 42 policy, tobacco policy around their playgrounds, our schools, our Head Start programs, our offices. So when we have an opportunity to build, we will. I've also seen the tribes have success in cessation when it can come from our own communities, when we can use our own best practices, when we can use what's culturally appropriate, when we can work with our own communities to develop messaging. We can be successful. I've been working in tobacco long enough that 20 years ago, Oregon Research Institute did a project called Project 16. And what was the finding? That if you go into the community and you work with your elders and you work with your youth and you work with your clinics, when you do cessation, you provide nicotine replacement therapy, you have counseling, you have follow-up, it will work, but it has to come from our own communities. So I think this is a huge opportunity to look at a way to empower the communities of color, the urban Indian communities, the tribal communities, to do something that we need to do for ourselves and on our own. The other thing I really want to stress is that we really are talking about tobacco abuse, commercial tobacco abuse. I heard someone earlier talk about traditional tobacco, and it kind of raised the hair on the back of my neck a little bit, because traditional tobacco is when you use it in ceremony and when you use it in prayer and when you use it for respect. It's not when you light a cigarette or you vape a product. That's traditional tobacco is something totally different. And then in closing, I just kind of want to say we've also seen success when we've been able to take things into our own when we've empowered our own communities. We've seen the tribes embrace seatbelt law, healthy foods, and I'll close there, but I think this is a great opportunity to empower our communities.
Greetings, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Finley, Marsh, and member of the committee. My name is Dr. Xenia Junkier, and I'm the director of the Oregon Health Equity Alliance. I'm here in support of House Bill 2270. OHE is one of four regional health equity coalitions and two capacity building coalitions in Oregon. Our leadership organizations represent five culturally specific community-based organizations and our local public health institute, all led by people of color. And we work across Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas counties. Regional health equity coalitions are community-driven cross-sectoral groups. The Regional Health Equity Coalition model works by building on the inherent strengths of local communities to meaningfully involve them in identifying sustainable, long-term policy systems and environmental solutions to increase health equity for underserved, underrepresented populations experiencing health disparities. The basis for Regional Health Equity Coalition model is based on the fact that increased and authentic community engagement, strengthened organizational capacity, and social norm and environment change are the foundation for policy and systems change. In Oregon, the burden of tobacco falls most heavily on African American, American Indian, Alaska Native communities, and people with lower incomes, though there are some concerns that all populations are not adequately accounted for given limitations in data collection and disaggregation. That said, the following statistics regarding tobacco are highly concerning. 30% of American Indians and Alaska Natives, 27% of Pacific Islanders, and 26% of African Americans smoke cigarettes compared to 17% of white Oregonians. Nearly 30% of adults enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan smoke cigarettes. Pacific Islander communities are showing an increasing trend towards tobacco usage. One in four Pacific Islander community members in Oregon smoke, and 42% of those are current menthol users. Between 2015 and 2017, 61% of African American smokers, 67% of Pacific Islanders, and 60% of Latinx smokers tried to quit smoking, compared with 53% of white smokers. E-cigarette companies are targeting kids with highly addictive nicotine-filled products to get them hooked on their products. Since 2017, the number of middle schoolers who say they have tried an e-cigarette has increased 48%, effectively creating a whole new generation of addicted smokers. To be clear, all of these groups have been specifically targeted by tobacco industry marketing. As a coalition, OHE must consider the root causes of smoking and address these issues with a deep understanding that the social determinants of health play a significant role in smoking initiation and tobacco use. People of color, those with lower incomes, and are less likely to be able to quit and more likely to die premature deaths of cancer as a result. Tobacco use is a health equity issue. Industry deliberately targets youth, low-income communities, and specific demographic groups. Although African-American communities smoke fewer cigarettes and start smoking cigarettes at an older age, they are more likely to die from smoking-related diseases. We know tobacco companies have targeted communities of color, and we appreciate your time today. I certainly appreciate your time today in listening to our testimony, and we hope we can count on your support of this very important bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Jana, Allie, and Michael. And after that, we will have Maggie, Bennington Davis, Ken Preventure, and Lisa Vance.
Hi, my name is Michael Jones. Good morning, representatives. A tax on vaping is the last thing we need in Oregon. Doubling the cost of vaping products will drive more people back to cigarettes. I'm in disbelief that our state wants people to go back to smoking cigarettes in order to make up the loss of tobacco revenue. It's almost like our state legislators are addicted to the tax. Millions of people made a personal switch to vaping from smoking. It wasn't because of your taxes that made most of them switch. It had everything to do with the step-down process that so far only vaping has been able to make that process. There are roughly around 200 vape shops, including mixed shops in Oregon, a revenue that wasn't just there a few years ago. My fear, like many, that if we end up with a tax like 95% or basically of any kind, the black market will increase in this state. Brick and mortar and adult only shops like mine that do an amazing job at stopping underage from getting their hands on vaping products will have no choice but to move out of state or go out of business.
I'm in fear that my employees will end up on unemployment along with many other small businesses. Keep in mind, we are not the internet. We check IDs face to face. I personally think taxing us and combining us as big tobacco is a huge mistake. Many will most likely go back to smoking, and maybe that's the plan with these tax bills. But for 480,000 people dying each year, including my mom, the medical cost is overwhelming on this state, when in fact smokeless products like vaping can have long-term savings to this great state. We don't deserve a tax. Thank you.
Hi, I am Allie Stubbert. I am a local e-liquid manufacturer. I'm going to go a little off my notes here, and I want to say first, vaping is actually not a tobacco product. Unfortunately, that's what FDA called it. There's no tobacco in it. Secondly, Juul and vaping, not quite the same thing. Juul has way more nicotine, and as you heard from the kids yesterday, that's what's causing the issues with teen smoking is the Juul. We're not Juul, not the same thing. So, because teens keep illegally vaping, you want to propose a tax on adult vapers. I continue hearing that the smoking rates are going up for youth. That is, in fact, not the truth, because if you look at the footnotes of all of those reports, they count a child that has taken one puff off of an e-cigarette in 1 month period as a vapor. That doesn't make a vapor. When we started this industry, we started self-regulating in 2013 using childproof caps, widely accepted norms of nicotine strength, and self-imposed demands to not allow anybody under 18, to purchase products. We promoted our solution, and because we did such a good job, we converted millions of smokers. Now we're being targeted. Why? Because we don't pay the state's master settlement agreement payments. Because big tobacco pays state governments for every pack of cigarettes they sell. Smokers are profit centers for state budgets.
I'm not sure if you heard that the timer had gone off.
That wasn't 3 minutes. That was his timer.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes, that's
I'll say
totally
my last
fair.
Sentence again. Smokers are profit centers for state budgets. Most people know that. They're not blind anymore. We spent nearly a decade helping fix the deadliest addiction in human history, and our reward is having our hard work and business pitched into the shredder and fed to the same people who used to sell them poison. Juul, by the way, has been bought out, not completely bought out, by big tobacco. You're asking for a 70% tax on Juul, 95% tax on vaping. Two completely different things. It's odd to me that the ones that own tobacco aren't getting taxed as much. And lastly, we need to start making kids accountable. If all of these teens are illegally vaping Juul, give them an MIP. That's what happened to me when I was 14 and got a cigarette. Got caught smoking cigarettes. When I got caught drinking, I got an MIP. I mean, this isn't a new thing with teen smoking. Unfortunately, there's thousands of ingredients in smoking, and the statistics don't really prove that kids vape and then turn to smoking. That is absurd. Absurdity. It's not true. That's all I got. Thanks.
Good morning, committee, and thank you for your time. I'm Jana Collingwood. I own two vape shops, one in Portland, one in Beaverton. I'm happy to be here today. Yesterday, I listened to all the testimony given by teens and others regarding the proposed vapor taxes. I'm here today to address the one topic that no one mentioned, the adults. I co-own two pure vape shops. By pure, I mean that we don't sell any OTP products. We do not sell functional glass for marijuana, and we do not sell any kinds of cigars, wraps, anything like that. No tobacco products at all. Our only focus is helping adults stop smoking. Our customer base is diverse. We serve the recovery community. We serve office workers, truck drivers, expectant parents, folks who can't have surgery until their bodies are nicotine free. They all have one thing in common. They want to stop smoking. They choose vapor. Why? Chantix has the most stringent black box warning allowed by the FDA. The side effects are too numerous to mention here. Nicotine patches and gum don't appeal to everyone and also have significant side effects. Cold turkey doesn't work. We know this. The New England Journal of Medicine just released a study in January showing that vapor products are 2 times more effective than any of the above solutions, nicotine replacement. The study is called a randomized trial of e-cigarettes versus nicotine replacement therapy. It was published on January 30th, and there is a link to that study in my email testimony to you. These adults are parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, teachers, bus drivers, coaches. They've paid taxes, they voted, they've contributed to our society all their lives. They deserve the opportunity to try this technology if they so choose. The only big tobacco players in the room are Juul and Altria. We're small business owners who live, work, and employ others in Oregon. We have had amazing life changes due to this technology and are inspired to help others experience the same. We do that every day. A 95% tax will leave us unable to compete with online sellers any longer. We already deal with that challenge, unlike tobacco or cigarettes. When Pennsylvania imposed a 40% tax on vapor products, 100 shops, 25% of the shops in that state closed. Regarding HB 2123 specifically, if Juul is the driver of underage use, then why is the proposed tax on them 70% while lower nicotine solutions like ours are at 95%? Interesting. Just yesterday, while we were here listening to testimony, the Massachusetts legislature removed a proposed tax of 40% wholesale plus a 13.75% excise tax on vapor products from their 2020 budget. A very blue state, like Oregon, they're on the right side of harm reduction history. So should you be. Please reject these bills.
Thank you, all three of you. Michael, Allie, Jana, thank you. Maggie, Ken, and Lisa, and after that, we will have Daryl from Columbia, Chris, and Timothy.
Good morning. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Finley and Marsh, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Maggie Bennington Davis. I'm the interim CEO and also Chief Medical Officer for HealthShare of Oregon, which is the state's largest coordinated care organization, also known as CCOs, serving approximately 315,000 Oregon Health Plan members living in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. I served as a member of the governor's OHP budget work group, and House Bill 2270 is one of the mechanisms the work group identified as part of a longer-term funding solution for the Oregon Health Plan. So I have two reasons to ask you to support this bill. As a physician, I care about health outcomes, and I also care about people using the Oregon Health Plan. Currently, 9% of all spending on the Oregon Health Plan is directly related to smoking-related illnesses, and that equates to roughly $374 million per year. House Bill 2270 will provide approximately $173 million per year for the Oregon Health Plan, which is less than half of what smoking costs the program, but it's a start. The Oregon Health Plan provides health care for nearly 1 million of the most vulnerable Oregonians, as well as meaningful investments in community and culturally specific programs that address prevention and cessation of tobacco and nicotine. Over 24% of HealthShare members smoke cigarettes. That's higher than the general population and much higher than higher income populations. HealthShare and other CCOs do cover a full spectrum of smoking cessation methods as part of the OHP benefit package, nicotine replacement therapies, complementary medicine, and more. And our providers do make referrals to the Oregon Quit Line and other public health resources too. But we know that the best way to ensure Oregonians don't smoke is to make sure they never start. And raising the price of tobacco is the single most effective tool for reducing use. Big Tobacco is already taxing Oregonians in the form of higher costs for the OHP and increased insurance premiums. I supported including this proposal in the governor's OHP funding plan because it's time that we directed these resources to provide affordable health coverage for the very Oregonians most vulnerable to Big Tobacco's marketing and the adverse health outcomes that result. Thank you for listening.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, good morning. My name's Ken Preventure. I'm the CEO of Pacific Source. We're an independent, community-based, not-for-profit health plan. We're based in Oregon. We serve commercial, Medicare, Medicaid members across four states, and we operate the coordinated care organizations in conjunction with our community partners in Central Oregon and the Columbia Gorge. I'm here in support of House Bill 2270 because we believe it serves a very important dual purpose. It provides really critical funding for the Oregon Health Plan, and it has the public health benefits that Maggie described. I also, along with both of my co-panelists, served on the governor's committee on Medicaid funding and actually have served on similar committees over the last four or five biennia. This is a very critical component of funding the Oregon Health Plan going forward and closing the significant gap that exists. The impact of tobacco and nicotine delivery products is well documented, and there is pretty significant evidence that tobacco and related taxes have an important impact on the level of usage. Some are suggesting that 10% increase in tobacco taxes can impact usage by 3 to 4%. And I would note that in the committee, we considered the impact of that reduction in usage in projecting our revenue impact. We do think it's critical that any disincentives that would exist in taxes be matched up with tools and resources. And at Pacific Source, we do many of the same programs that Maggie described, and we think it's critical that those be offered to our members and our CCOs. We work with both OHA and public health officials to utilize evidence-based approaches to reach our most vulnerable Medicaid members. So we encourage your support of House Bill 2270. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name's Lisa Vance. I'm the chief executive for Providence in Oregon. I was a member of the governor's Medicaid work group, as Ken mentioned, and I'm here today to voice my strong support for the House Bill 2270. Providence is Oregon's largest health system with 8 hospitals and more than 100 clinics statewide. Every day in our communities across our state, we see the impacts of tobacco and e-cigarette use. Our clinicians treat the chronic conditions that come from years of tobacco use. We know that over 60% of our patients addicted to tobacco and nicotine want to quit. One of our most effective ways to reduce smoking and prevent smoking among young people is to raise the price of smoking. That's why House Bill 2270 has multiple benefits. It will reduce smoking among those already addicted, and it will prevent teens from ever picking up the habit. I do want to emphasize this, that this will also fund prevention and cessation programs as well as the Oregon Health Plan. As a member of the governor's work group on Medicaid funding, I can tell you that the committee looked, as Ken says, at multiple ways to provide stable funding for the Oregon Health Plan. House Bill 2270 was an important part of that package because it has dual benefits for the health plan. First, it will raise $349 million per biennium once fully implemented, which is necessary to create long-term stable funding for the plan. Second, we know it will reduce costs. In the 5 years after House Bill 2270 passes, we know we can expect the following cost savings from health changes: $14.2 million from fewer smoking-affected pregnancies and births in Oregon, $13.6 million savings from fewer smoking-caused heart attacks and strokes, and $5.9 million from fewer smoking-caused lung cancer cases. The Center of Disease Control and Prevention estimates that smoking-related health costs and productivity losses amount to more than $19 per pack of cigarettes sold. Yet the tax on Oregon cigarettes today is currently $1.33 a pack. House Bill 2270 is necessary to ensure that tax on cigarette reflects the cost of cigarettes to the health system and to the state. We will also be submitting written statement. Thank you for the opportunity to share our support for the important bill. We appreciate your support and consideration for House Bill 2270. Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. And that's a good reminder again for everyone that even though there are a few members not here with us right now, they have the opportunity to read all the written materials that are submitted. And you, your friends and family, and the committee members can also watch the recorded hearing online if you have access to a computer. Or a smartphone or what? Just get it from the cloud. Daryl, Chris, and Timothy. And after that, we will have Marnie, Kyle, Alex, Kyler, and Andy Smith after this panel to try to get in everybody's testimony by the end of our hearing period. After this panel, I'm going to switch to 2 minutes each. And then I think we really are very likely to be able to accommodate everyone who's come to be with us today. Yes.
Madam Chairman, Vice Chairman, committee members, my name is Daryl Govea. I'm a manager at a vape tobacco shop. A little nervous, as you can see. I've heard a lot of big numbers thrown out. I'm not a big numbers guy. Big numbers for me is a couple extra hours at work, get overtime, pay for my family. I work with people who have single mother putting herself through school. I'm talking about jobs. I think everyone here can agree, and I haven't heard anyone despair this, is smoking is bad for the youth. We should keep smoking and vape products out of the hands of the youth. That's an easy call. It's the job killing. It's the excessive tax that's the problem. It's not even taking a small bite. It's the job killing. I have 40 employees in my business, and we will lose the majority of those if this passes. The double the cost of putting out a product is a job killer. And has been stated even by the pro is smoking is going down by their numbers. And I don't have the big numbers, so I'm gonna use theirs. 9% of the health plan is smoking related, yet this tax is 50% of the cost of the health plan. And coming into this building, there's a sign out there engraved in the building says that under the law, and I'm paraphrasing, that the benefits should be justly proportioned. I think the burden to provide those benefits should also be justly proportioned, and I think this is out of proportion to those benefits. I think the benefits are good. But close your eyes and imagine someone coming in and taking your business that you spent your entire life building. I'm a benefit of the Oregon Health Plan. I'm now paying my own health care from jobs in this. We have a 21-year over shop. We do not allow minors even in our shop, let alone sell to them. That's not the issue here. The issue for me is, does this accomplish what you're looking for? You're trying to accomplish keeping hands out of the hands of minors, these tobacco products. This doesn't really accomplish this. This is more of a money grab, and it's not proportional. You're attacking the very small proportion of Oregonians that smoke. The highest number I've heard is 17% in here of most Oregonians smoking. It's majority putting the burden on the minority. If it's such a problem, it should be equally fared by everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Council. My name is Timothy Porter. I own a vape shop out in McMinnville. I came out just to point out some stuff. You guys are wanting this tax because of youth vaping. Youth vaping, you gotta ask yourself, how are they getting this? They're getting it online. If you could go into a liquor store and check, are you 21 or older, without no question, then they'd be drinking. Online sales are how they're getting these devices, and a tax is not gonna stop it. I have 4 children. Children will go to any lengths to fit in or to stand out or to try to be cool. So that's not gonna help. It's gonna hurt the vape shops. We are trying to help people quit smoking. These are not cheap devices in the first place. You come in, you're trying to quit, you're looking for a better alternative. We're there to help you through it. It's not an easy task. I mean, there's so much you gotta learn. Another thing is safety. I mean, safety, people are buying things online. They don't know what they're buying. They're putting things together that aren't meant to be to go together. And it could cause it to explode. They're using flashlight batteries instead of high amp batteries that they need. We are there to help people walk through it. If they have problems or anything, they know they have some place they can go and get their answers
to help them be successful. So it's just going to hurt a lot of people that are actually trying to better themselves, and it's 95% safer. We have helped people, lots of people, step down their nicotine and walk away because we don't have the 4,000 addictive chemicals that big tobacco companies put in their cigarettes to keep you addicted. So that's pretty much all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Christopher Ferreira, and I own a retail business that employs six and sells vapor products in Washington County, Oregon. I want to thank the committee for affording me the opportunity to participate today. I am in opposition of the proposed taxes for many reasons. I have personally seen what this product can do. I have witnessed transformations of health that would make you think that magic is involved. The product works, and it works as intended, as an alternative for adults. For adults who wish to use nicotine in a new way, a way other than combustible tobacco, or an alternative to quit altogether, a different pathway, a choice. Exorbitant taxes on these kinds of products would afflict adults of impoverished means. Oregonians with no other way to absorb fiscal increases will see smoking as the cheaper alternative. We have seen this market behavior already with the institution of federal import taxes on our vaping devices. It would seem unwise to deny the rights of these people by way of financial prejudice and privilege. A product with a net gain on public health should not be limited to those who can afford a tax. We know it has a positive gain on public health because there have been numerous studies done to support it. According to a study published by Oxford University Press in 2019 on behalf of the Society for Research on Nicotine and Tobacco, quote, daily e-cigarette use is strongly associated with recent smoking cessation among U.S. adults. The Royal College of Physicians published a paper in 2016 that says, quote, vaping is 95% safer than smoking, and, quote, e-cigarettes are marketed as consumer products, are providing a much more popular NRT as a substitute and competitor for big tobacco. They're actually more popular as an NRT replacement because they work. Again, I oppose these taxes on all proposals. The products work, the experts say they work, current studies confirm they work, and for adults, they work. These products are for adults and adults only. No responsible business owner wants to see these products in the hands of children. No Oregonian wants to see these products in the hands of children. Taxing these products will not get them out of the children's hands. It will not make it more difficult for the status quo tech-savvy kid to circumvent the system. They do it now. As adults with children, we want to protect them. We teach them at a certain age how to tie their shoes. We teach them at a certain age how to drive. We teach them. We should be teaching them now and not limiting the rights of adults by overtaxing a product that works and saves lives. We should be discussing fair and equitable terms that make sense, coming to common ground to find viable solutions. Taxing the Oregon constituency to a literal death does not seem fair, equitable, nor viable for the future of Oregon and Oregon's health. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, all three. So now we have Marnie, Alex, and Andy. After that, we will have Tim O'Dell, I need to do a little planning. After, with Tim O'Dell, we will also have Wendy Johnson, and then we'll go to the next group. And we are switching to 2 minutes now.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Nathanson and Vice Chair Marsh and Finley. My name's Marnie Kyle. I'm with Washington County Department of Health and Human Services. I want to first say thank you for the time to offer our support for House Bill 2270. One thing I want you to know is I have been a public health nurse for over 30 years, and I have to sit here 30 years later and say tobacco use continues to remain the leading cause of death, preventable death, in the United States. So we have made progress, as others have described, but in Washington County in 2017, 570 people died due to tobacco use, costing our community over $192 million in lost productivity. So although cigarette use has been declining, there has been a steep rise in other tobacco products that are being used, and especially in youth. In 2018, both the FDA and the Surgeon General declared that the use of e-cigarettes and vaping is an epidemic that requires historic action. Vaping has become so popular in Washington County that in our most recent student wellness survey, 29% of 11th graders reported trying e-cigarettes or vaping, and 16% reported that they had used those products in the last 30 days. Raising taxes on tobacco products is a proven strategy that reduces consumption, and including inhalants in that definition would really curb youth use of these e-cigarettes and vaping products. Research has shown that for every 10% increase in the real price of cigarettes reduces adult smoking by 2% and kids by 6%. So I'll finish with saying tobacco taxes are a public health policy that win-win. It raises revenues for our OHP, it reduces the rates of tobacco use, and it saves lives. So we hope that you will support House Bill 2270. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Andy Smith from the Association of Oregon Counties. AOC strongly supports House Bill 2270, and I want to make 3 points about that, but briefly acknowledge a letter from Commissioner Claire Hall. She is from Lincoln County and has been working on the tobacco issue for more than 2 decades. And just some statistics from that county in Claire's testimony. In Lincoln County, approximately 1 in 3 adults smoke cigarettes, as well as 1 in 5 pregnant women. Those are alarming statistics, some of the highest in Oregon. And they also, as a result, Lincoln County faces one of the highest tobacco-related death rates in the state at 206.5 deaths per 100,000 people. So I hope that you would refer to Commissioner Hall's letter. On behalf of AOC, there are really 3 overarching reasons that we would support House Bill 2270. First, the act itself of raising these taxes would be an important public policy action step. It would impact use rates. And as has been discussed, for a 10% reduction, the data that I've seen is about 4% reduction in adults and about a 7% reduction in youth for a 10% increase. The second main reason that we would support House Bill 2270 has to do with the Oregon Health Plan. And as you know, since this state has expanded Medicaid about 6 years ago, we went from 600,000 Oregonians to about 1 million Oregonians on the health plan. Without this new revenue, the gains that we made in that those significant numbers are in jeopardy. That would be the second reason. The third reason relates to public health and public health modernization. Public health modernization has been an important kind of goalpost for Oregon in many ways, but we have not been able to fund that initiative. In the current biennium, that's at $5 million. The revenue under House Bill 2270 could really move us much closer to that goal of almost $48 million for public health. And just let me acknowledge quickly some of the services. When we say public health, what does that mean? The services we're talking about, promoting maternal and child health, suicide prevention programs, immunization programs, testing and keeping our public water safe, and a number of other programs. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members, and Vice Chair Marsh and Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager here in support of House Bill 2270. You do have testimony from me on OLIS. A couple points I want to make. Lane County, like other counties, does document the number of deaths annually due to tobacco use. Our number is 720. And in terms of our youth numbers, between 2013 and 2017, we're seeing trending going in all the wrong ways, in particular with respect to the inhalant devices. So we support both the increased tax on cigarettes and inhalant delivery devices. We also support 10% of the revenue raised from this being used for tobacco use prevention. We note that public health modernization does include, as one of its foundational programs, the prevention and control of tobacco use, and that will just lead to more work on our part in the future on this important health policy. I do want to let the committee know that our board has been very active with respect to tobacco policies. In Lane County, we've got, in 2014, we did retail licensure of tobacco products. We have done a number of different facility and parks programs to exclude tobacco use from those in 2017 and 2018. And notably, in 2017, Lane County increase the age for tobacco purchase to the age of 21 prior to the state of Oregon doing that. This is a board and a population in Lane County that's been very supportive of that work, and there's no doubt in my mind that had we had the authority to raise a local tax on tobacco, that board would have done that work in 2017 at the same time. Thank you.
Next, we have Tim O'Dell, Wendy Johnson. After that, we will have Courtney Halstein, Stacy Michaels. I'm going to announce one more name in a minute. I think if everybody keeps to 2 minutes or even shorter, we can fit everyone in, but I do need to stop the public hearing at 10 till. I hope the committee can stay an extra 5 minutes. Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I have a written testimony on OLIS, so I won't repeat that. On the second page of that document is a chart that shows the distribution of present tax revenues. There are two buckets. There's the cigarette tax and the other tobacco. Cities receive a very small portion, 2% of the cigarette tax is just under 2%. That also sort of equates to 2 mils. The League is concerned with this bill and the way it's written on the distribution, which is in section 2. It does not keep us whole, and all of the tax increase, none of that portion would be shared with cities. You may question why was there a distribution to cities to begin with. When the voters passed a cigarette tax, a tobacco tax in 1967, 25% went to cities, and another 50% went to property tax help, basically, to help with the costs of those. The measure had failed many times until it was shared with local governments. So we are preempted from doing tobacco taxes, period, and exchange were to get shared revenue. Unfortunately, you all have to pass a budget, a balanced budget at the state level, and so do cities. Over the years, that equation has been lowered and lowered and lowered to the point where now we're only getting 2%. We understand the nexus with the health plan and understand that you're trying to fill that hole. It's balanced now with the provider tax. You have excess this session. So we would prefer that you look at that distribution again and make cities whole, and also consider making us getting some portion of that. We are a partner with you in government. We have to police and we take the complaints on smoking and tobacco. We have costs as well. Without property tax and some other revenue shortages fixes, we are running at a loss, and we need that assistance. So thank you for your time.
Yes. Good day. Excuse me for reading my testimony here, but I get a little edgy in situations like this. My name is Tim O'Dell. I own and operate Tim's Great Cigars in Wood Village, where we sell premium cigars, pipes, and pipe tobaccos. No cigarettes, vaping products, or paraphernalia whatsoever. I've provided for my family in this manner for close to 30 years now, and I love this business. I'm writing this testimony in opposition to the bills that would seek to remove the 50% cap on premium cigars. A few years ago, the cap was introduced to replace the high percentage of tax and on these cigars with excellent results. Revenues increased as customers learned that they could buy from the local retailer instead of going across the river or referring to the internet. It was a win-win situation. To digress now and remove the cap would be a detriment to the livelihood of the cigar store operators statewide. The drastic increase in cigar taxes would surely drive the consumer back to the internet and bring financial hardship to our industry, making our future uncertain, to say the least. Speaking for myself, I know there's lots of other people that are in the same boat. I would rather look forward to a successful future and maybe one day even sell my business to follow more leisurely pursuits with my family rather than watch my business dwindle and eventually have to close the doors. I don't mean to sound overdramatic, but that is the picture that customers preferring to buy on the internet paints for us. Please allow the 50-cent tax to stay in place to provide a more certain future for us all. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And our last panel will be Courtney Stacy Michaels and Mary Williams.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Stacy Michelson. I am here wearing the Multnomah Education Service District hat, as well as the six districts that I represent from East Multnomah County. But we do have testimony submitted for the record from a number of the education lobby, including OEA, OSBA, COSA, and some of my other partner districts. Here today to speak generally in support of the idea of increasing the tobacco tax, and particularly for including vape products in that process. We know that we are seeing an increasing number of students taking up vaping. It's something that we hear anecdotally from teachers and our folks out in the field. And we also know from the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey, which shows that we've seen about twice as many students try vaping as they have tried cigarettes. And we've seen a big jump between the last couple of years and the number of students that have begun to try vaping. And as other folks have said, we're seeing more students pick up vaping than cigarettes. It poses a few challenges from the school perspective. There are logistical issues of how easily disguisable vape products are from a student perspective. They look very much like the pens, pencils, USB drives that kids bring into the classroom anyway. So there is some temptation to try to get away with vaping in a classroom. That's just one of the challenges that we from the education perspective see, but our impetus in being here today is the concern for the health of our students and what it means that these products that come in flavors like strawberry, bubblegum, vanilla, are appealing to our students in a way that cigarettes no longer are. We feel like we made really great gains in decreasing youth smoking, and it seems like we're taking some steps backward as we see more and more vaping happening among our students. So we know from our public health friends that a tax increase is one of the most effective ways to reduce youth uptake. They're a market who is very sensitive to price increases, so it's for that reason that we're asking you to consider the proposals before you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Finley and Marsh, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Courtney Hellstein, and on behalf of the Cascade AIDS Project and PRISM Health, we're here to support House Bill 2270. My full comments are on OLIS. I'll work to be brief. The Cascade AIDS Project is Oregon's largest and oldest AIDS service organization, and PRISM Health is our LGBTQ plus focused primary care clinic. So through our work, we've seen the impact that tobacco has on the health of individual clients, as well as the LGBTQ plus community overall. Nearly one in three LGBTQ adults smoke. LGBT high school students use tobacco products at a rate of 40.5%, and transgender youth smoke at a rate of 31%. So smoking results in significant health disparities in our community and kills over 30,000 LGBTQ people per year. So tobacco companies have a long history of targeting the LGBTQ community through advertising. I think one of the most troubling, and there's a link to some research on this, one of the most troubling examples is a former marketing campaign targeting the LGBTQ community that the industry titled Project Scum. House Bill 2270 will help provide health care for nearly 1 million vulnerable Oregonians, as well as meaningful investments in community and culturally specific programs to address prevention and cessation of tobacco and nicotine. And for that, we encourage this committee support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee. My name is Mary Williams, and I'm here today representing over 60 coalition members to talk about our support of House Bill 2270. We represent all areas of the state, all income levels, and the full spectrum of political ideology. I wanted to reiterate that this legislation, if passed, would be a part of a six-year funding package for the Oregon Health Plan, which provides care for nearly 1 million of the most vulnerable Oregonians, including 400,000 children. Additionally, there is a 10% allocation in the bill that would go to fund culturally specific community-based programs to address cessation and prevention and health disparities related to tobacco and nicotine use due to the systematic targeting of marginalized and low-income communities by big tobacco. The current cost to OHP due to tobacco and nicotine-related illness is nearly $374 million per year and roughly $1,700 per Oregon household per year in associated health care costs. The costs associated with tobacco and nicotine, aside from the devastating loss of nearly 8,000 Oregonians, impacts all Oregonians, whether we smoke or not. Cessation of tobacco and nicotine looks different for every smoker, and quite honestly, quitting tobacco and nicotine is hard. We've heard today that there are people addicted to these products, and we need to have meaningful investments and accessible programs so that those who have been targeted by tobacco and e-cigarette marketing can have the supports they need when they are ready to quit. That's why both Medicaid and privately insured Oregonians have access to all FDA-approved devices, but to date, no e-cigarette products have been approved by the FDA as a cessation device. Furthermore, OHA estimates that we have lost nearly 4 years of progress in smoking cessation and prevention work due to the e-cigarette epidemic. I've heard over the last 2 days concerns around cross-border sales. If Oregon were to increase the cigarette tax, an average net price of a pack of cigarettes inclusive of all applicable state tax, not just tobacco tax, would still be lower than both California and Washington. I urge you to take a look at the long-term impacts of this legislation and hope that you'll stand with us in support.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony today, for helping us get through a long list of people who had signed up. I appreciate the information that everyone has brought to us, both in person and verbally and submitted in writing. We will have time, we will schedule a time for committee questions, legislative revenue office responses, and committee discussion at a later date. For now, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bills 2123, 2158, 2159, 2169, 2270. We are adjourned.